My first exposure to comedy was The Comedy Channel, which is a precursor to Comedy Central. Back in the early 90s, it mostly aired clips of stand-up from the 80s. You know, a comedian standing in front of a brick wall with a microphone, making witty observations about airline food. But occasionally, they would air this show called Whose Line Is It Anyway? That I found entirely captivating. The show's still on the air now, albeit with a different host and different performers. The original iteration I saw was British, and thus my first exposure to any non-American entertainment. And secondly, it was performance art. The host would throw out suggestions, a physical setting or a style of music, for example, to the four performers to construct a scene. It would often start out seriously and then very quickly devolve into something bizarre and hilarious. They came up with unusual skits, musical numbers, danced around with strange props. Even the jokes that referenced England that I didn't get still somehow made me laugh. And at first, I didn't realize that this show was improvised. I thought it was somehow scripted and the performers were just acting out what they'd rehearsed. I mean, Whose Line Is It Anyway seems to refer to a written performance, right? But over time, I learned that these comedians were able to come up with not only something coherent, but also funny in a matter of mere seconds. They were collectively working to create a shared reality that led to laughter. What a gift. My mindset back then, at age 12 or 13, was that adulthood also must be scripted. All the grown-ups in my life automatically knew what they were doing because they were following their grown-up scripts. Clearly, they had received their manual of how to be 27 or 42 or 70, and were just following those instructions. Now, I got a little bit older and realized that, unfortunately, my script was not going to show up. My parents did their best to prepare me along the way, but I still felt like I was just lurching through life, making it up as I went. I used to get incredibly self-conscious about what I would say and how I would act, convinced that I was doing it all wrong, and if I just had that script, I could play my part. Now, I see being able to make it up as you go really is a gift, and a scripted life would be pretty miserable. If nothing is truly preordained, then we get to decide the direction our lives take. We can yes and a decision and see where it takes us. And sometimes we need to yes and down a path for a long time before figuring out it's not the path for us any longer. We can choose to bring that scene to a close and find a new one that fits better. We may have scene partners in life for long stretches of time, or we may change jobs or partners or neighborhoods or life circumstances happen and start fresh with new players. There's something magical about having people in your life that you can have a shared reality with. The things you create together that you couldn't do by yourself because you needed their individual unique input, with the whole being greater than the sum of those individual parts. What a gift indeed.
The first time that I really encountered improv comedy was when I was living in Chicago in seminary, and I would occasionally go downtown to Second City, the improv troupe that launched many famous Saturday Night Live careers, including Tina Fey, who wrote the readings that we heard earlier. It was so fascinating to me how they could call out to the audience for input. Location, Paris, a holiday, Halloween, an animal, octopus. And voila, they would concoct a scene taking place in Paris on Halloween involving a dramatic conflict with a pet octopus, and it would be hilarious. I would think to myself, and I still do, how do they do that? I know I would freeze up. I would get way too anxious. I would worry that I don't know what to say next. In fact, when Brian and I met by Zoom last week to record the improv scenes that you saw, I was really nervous. What if I can't think of anything to say? What if I'm not funny? Luckily, I was partnering with Brian, who's a pretty funny guy, and our ability to bounce ideas back and forth was natural and fun. I love what Brian said in his reflection. about thinking as a kid that adults had a script for life. I know that I thought that too, and it was really disappointing to find out the truth. But as an adult, I have learned skills for figuring things out as I go. And one of the most important of these skills has been finding a community to support me when I don't know what to do. This year has been like a giant improv for our world, for our society, and for our fellowship too. If you had asked me to come up with an off-the-wall scene idea for this year's pledge campaign a year ago, I would never have dreamed up a scenario where we were 11 months into a worldwide pandemic, offering worship and connection opportunities by Zoom, and communicating entirely by phone, email, Facebook, and videos. Honestly, if someone had started our improv scene with that setup a year ago, I might have just said, no. End scene. But here we are, continuing to play off of each other, build on the reality that we find ourselves in, and collaborate with creativity. Unitarian Universalism is the improv comedy of religions. We, as a theological tradition, strive to embody the yes and in our values and in our actions. We're not set in our ways with only one path to follow. We believe that our search for truth and meaning is enhanced when we do it together. Here are the two most important things that I have learned from improv comedy about how to be a better Unitarian Universalist. Number one, trust and boundaries make the scene work. And number two, you are needed to collaborate creatively. Okay, so number one, trust and boundaries make the scene work. Improv comedy only works. Yes, and only works if everyone in the scene agrees to the ground rules. They need to understand that they're in a scene and that they're going to trust each other and work together, acknowledging each other's creations and trying to add to the scene so that it's able to continue. If any of those agreements are missing, then the whole improv falls apart. We saw this in the first scene that Brian and I tried earlier. I was trying to participate, but he was only going with his own ideas, or he was simply stopping it altogether. Now, spoiler alert, that was a pre-prepared scene. Brian's not really that bad at improv comedy. He actually is just a really good sport, and he wrote that scene himself. Now, I was recently in our fellowship building, as I am today, and something caught me the corner of my eye. It was a small half sheet of paper. And when I went over to it, I saw that it was this, a copy of our order of service from March 9th, 2020, the last time we were in our building together for worship. It was a little like uncovering the ash from the Mount Vesuvius eruption. Something just frozen in time like that. The title of the sermon that day, almost a year ago, was Freedom and Fences. Brian Merton was the worship leader that day, and I was preaching, just like today. If you were around that Sunday morning, you might remember that we were visited by protesters from a local conservative group. They've been known to picket outside of Planned Parenthood and local schools, Lawrence University, and other churches. On March 2nd, the week before, they had visited our neighbor across the street, Prince of Peace Lutheran, protesting their ELCA stance, which is pro-choice. But that Sunday, March 9th, it was, for lack of a better word, our turn to get protested. So these people arrived, they stood on our sidewalk as people drove or walked into our parking lot for worship. They had large signs with profanity, and they were screaming hateful sentiments that were anti-gay, anti-choice, and anti-transgender at our congregants. As your minister, I went out there before the service and I talked briefly with them. I was grateful for Brian. If you can't tell on Zoom, Brian is very tall and I am very not tall. I was so grateful that he accompanied me out to the parking lot. I told these protesters that they were allowed to be where they were, but that I would ask you not to engage with them. When I came back in the building and our services began, I said the same to you. It was a heartbreaking moment, but I was proud the way that we handled it that Sunday. None of you were hateful in return. We did not denigrate their humanity. We believe that they still have inherent worth and dignity. However, some folks, after the fact, asked if we had invited them in. Had we offered them coffee? Had we tried to extend ourselves to them in other ways? And the truth is, we did not. And I'm okay with that. I could not, in good conscience, trust that they were going to stop screaming hate at the people in our space who come here for peace and sustenance. The reason I'm reminded of that Sunday almost a year ago is because yes and doesn't always work. There has to be trust. There has to be a shared agreement to work toward connection if it's going to succeed. I could yes and those protesters all day long, especially if we were in a one-on-one situation. We could disagree, we could discuss our biblical disagreements, maybe possibly even come to some shared agree-to-disagree truce. But that morning, they did not show up for dialogue. If I start a scene with, "Here's your meal, sir. Can I offer you anything else?" And Brian says, "No," then that is where the scene ends. They came here with gigantic, gruesome placards and a bullhorn to yell at us, not with us. And that is where the scene ends. I might be willing and able to keep the scene going, but it won't go anywhere if both parties aren't willing to participate. That Sunday morning last March, the topic of our service was freedom within fences, the need for boundaries in order to be truly free. This is still true. Without our covenants, our agreement to abide by our Unitarian Universalist seven principles and to hold our values as central in our relationships, then yes, and isn't possible. Our creativity is stunted without our collective agreements to participate in right relationship. I'm so glad that we have our principles for a healthy congregation, which guide our behavior together as a congregation. They still guide our behavior, even when we are online. And I'm so glad that we have our healthy congregation team whose job is to support our efforts to keep all of our relationships strong and healthy. With these foundations and the covenants that we have created in our small groups and our committees, then we can flourish within our community as active, creative participants in this endeavor that we call Unitarian Universalism. If we have those agreements in place, and here at our fellowship we do, then how do we keep the scene going? This brings me to our second point. You are needed to collaborate creatively. In the little UU meditation manual, little book entitled Bless the Imperfect, the Unitarian Universalist minister Don Southworth is sharing a story about how he attended his first day of seminary, and he was invited along with each of the students to go up and pick up a little sand dollar and hold it and meditate on it. But each time he got one, it crumbled in his hands. He was starting to get worried that this was a bad omen for his future ministry. And then a t-shirt caught his eye. Quote, it said, "How will you use your gifts? Since sand dollars did not seem to be my thing, I hoped I could do a better job with that question. On that day, that question became one of the guiding lights of my life and ministry. How will you use your gifts? Imagine," he writes, "what would happen if every one of us committed to living out the answer to that question and helping others to do the same. Imagine if every person in the world overcame their doubts, fears, and oppressions, and was able to share all their gifts. We have the power to change and heal the world when we use our gifts to bless the world." End quote. If Unitarian Universalism and this fellowship community in particular are to be successful, we need each other. We need you. And we need to be brave and willing to share our gifts and our contributions. This month, we are focusing, as we do each year, on our stewardship campaign, our request for everyone to complete their pledge form so that we know how much to budget for in the coming year. It's hard to be creative with our plans for the future if we don't have any idea how we could possibly fund them. So yes, we do need your contributions in terms of your pledge and your giving. But we also need your thoughts and your opinions. We need sharing your voice in our services and our other weekday and weeknight offerings. Tina Fey says this about improvising a scene and being willing to keep the scene going. Quote, "To me, yes and means don't be afraid to contribute. It's your responsibility to contribute. Always make sure you're adding something to the discussion. Your initiations are worthwhile." End quote. Now, of course, it's also good to know when to close our mouths. For example, if we're just repeating something that someone else said in the room, or if we are engaging in a social justice effort and we want to ensure that we're following the lead of the people who are closest to the issue that we're trying to help. But when we're talking about theology, growing our hearts and minds, or creatively engaging our fellowship community, yes and is a good rule of thumb. This means that if someone shares with you that they are a UU Christian and they love Bible stories, even if you are an atheist, you could say, yes. And I believe in the power of humanity without the need for God isn't it cool how we can both learn from each other here? Let's talk some more. Or if you're invited to join a committee, you could say, yes, and when do we meet? Or, yes, and right now is not a great time for me. Can you ask me again in the future? Or even, you know, yes, and I'm not sure that's the best fit for my skills. Can we talk about other places I might serve better? There are lots of ways to say yes and. Don Southworth says, quote, we have the power to change and heal the world when we use our gifts to bless the world. He continues, and what better place to practice than in our religious communities, where we are encouraged to bring our unique talents, skills, passions, and dreams, and share them as widely as we can. Our faith and our fellowship is not about one right answer, one perfect story, or one authoritative voice. We are a faith tradition rooted in congregationalism. Congregationalism is a religious structure that emphasizes shared leadership and shared inspiration. This means that we are a collectively, collaboratively creative people. We work together to grow our minds and spirits. We believe that we can't do it entirely alone. You are needed, not only for what you will gain from your active participation, but for what you will provide to others and to our greater whole. I'm so glad to be a part of a faith community where we can find our way forward through joyful times and hard ones, inspiring and supporting each other with new ideas and ways of being together in right relationship. Because as Tina Fey says, in a successful improv scene, and I would add, in a healthy, collaborative faith community, quote, there are no mistakes, only happy accidents. Amen. And may it be so.